We will focus on the priorities of the people of London. Cutting crime, improving transport, protecting green space, delivering affordable housing, giving taxpayers value for money in every one of the 32 boroughs, and I hope that everybody who loves this city will put aside party differences to join in the making of Greater London greater still. Let's get cracking tomorrow, and let's have a drink tonight. Thank you very much.
That was Boris Johnson. Who else? Making a gracious late-night victory speech here at City Hall in London after becoming the capital's mayor back in May. By then, I'd spent a lot of time with Boris and his main rival, Ken Livingstone, on the campaign trail, and I'd formed a clear impression of both candidates. I thought Ken the better choice, yet Boris did have some good ideas. I'm Dave Hill, and this is Boris's London, a documentary for Comment Is Free. In this programme, I'll be assessing Boris's first 7 months in power. Is the mayor delivering on his campaign pledges on youth crime, transport, planning and the environment? Is he really listening to Londoners? A soundbite we heard from him frequently. And what does he have to say for himself? I'll be taking my findings to Boris Johnson at the end of the show.
Lovely lot of bananas there, anywhere you like.
We're starting our journey across Boris's London in East London. Outside Queen's Market. It's very, very close to West Ham football grounds. It's a beautiful day and it's very busy. The streets are busy, the market is busy. However, the local council, that's Newham, they've got plans to change things a bit around here. They think it's going to improve the whole neighbourhood, but the problem is that not everybody who lives here and works here agrees with them. Joining me here is Pauline Rowe. Now, Pauline is a local resident and she's also been a shopper here at Queen's Market for 30 years. She is a member of an extremely well-organised and active local campaign group, which is very unhappy with the council's plans for the area. So, Pauline, can you, first of all, describe to us how the place will change if the plans go through?
The small shops around the market will be pulled down. They'll be replaced by tower blocks, and the tallest will be 31 stories high. These tower blocks will contain 350 apartments, and the market itself will be put into a market hall. It'll be enclosed.
Now, of course, if I was representing Newham Council here, I would say, listen, what we're doing is we're improving the area. These new flats, especially the lovely new tower block, are going to attract more prosperous people. The changes to the market and the shops within the market are going to move everything up market, and that's going to bring more prosperity to the area, which is good for absolutely everyone. So what would you say to that?
A lot of the residents of Newham are people on low incomes, doing essential jobs, nursery nurses, cleaners, checkout people. They need the market and they need its low-cost value for money food that they can buy here. They also need housing. The flats will be beyond their reach, and only 27 of them will be for social rent.
So in a way, this is the kind of classic argument really about regeneration. The people who are in favour of what they call regeneration say what you do is you move things up market and that makes it better for everyone. And the other side of the argument is, well, actually no, because it's going to price a lot of the people who live around here out of the market, whether that's for housing or fruit and veg or whatever it is.
Yes, and remember, there's only one Queen's Market.
I'm looking at a man called Neil, who's wearing a very nice shirt, and I'm looking at a lot of bananas and a lot of oranges and a lot of apples. You are?
I'm Neil Stockwell. I've been in Upton Park Market for 35 years. My family have been here for 70 years before me. This market here supplies this whole area with valuable asset, which is fruit. People can come here and get 15 satsumas for £1. This market is a jewel of the East End. Please do not let people that don't care about the market never come down here, take it away from the people that do use it.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're here today to ask Boris Johnson a question. Why on earth he is letting plans go ahead for a high-rise to be built over Queen's Market in East London?
Well, I'm outside City Hall, where a group of the Queen's Market campaigners are gathered to, in their words, send Boris Johnson a message. This is a good day for it, because today is Mayor's Question Time, where Mayor Johnson is put under the microscope by members of the London Assembly. One of those members, the Green Party member, Jenny Jones, is going to be asking him a specific question about the Queen's Market development.
Jenny, there you are. I have to say that this is a a planning application that I have not yet determined, and it will...
Would you be prepared to visit Queen's Market and have a look at it without commenting, obviously? Would you be prepared to do that and meet the campaigners?
I see no reason why I shouldn't. How about that? I will go in. There you go. I think you've achieved your objective, Jenny.
We've been to Queen's Market, now we're in Queen's Way. They sound fairly similar, but this is a very different part of town. This is affluent West London, where many, many people voted for Boris Johnson back in May. Now, Queensway lies in the western extension of the congestion charge area. This was brought in by Ken Livingstone, despite many local residents being very unhappy about it. During the election campaign, Boris Johnson promised that there would be another consultation, and he said that he would act upon the wishes of local people. This pretty much amounted to a promise to get rid of the western extension. Now the consultation is underway, but is opinion in this part of town quite as united as it may have seemed a few months ago? Now I'm sitting in a coffee shop in Whiteley's, which used to be a famous department store. I think nowadays we call it a shopping mall, with John Zammit, who is chairman of the South East Bayswater Residents Association. So John, initially it seemed as though there was a very strong feeling against it, and they were very cross with Ken Livingstone for bringing in the Western Extension. But now we've got shades of grey, haven't we? We've got some people have decided actually, when you put in the add together the discount and the fact that there's a bit less traffic on the road, it's quite a good deal for them.
Yeah, we've got numerous shades of grey. Effectively now, the members of our society and many other societies in London who were against it and were just really ignored by Ken Livingstone, and they were against the extension, they now actually find it's quite beneficial to them.
If you had to make a small bet now on which of the three options that are being put before people in this consultation is going to prevail, those three options being keep it as it is, get rid of it altogether, or this sort of middle way, which might involve extending the discount for people who live here or having a free period in the middle of the day, which of those three options do you think Boris is going to go for in the end?
Well, I think originally he thought he wanted to get rid of it, it was a vote winner. Then he thought he may have to keep it. So now they found a middle way, I think. And it's, although it hasn't been widely advertised, the options being presented to the residents give everyone the best of both worlds.
Since we spoke to John Zammit, Transport for London has completed its consultation and Boris has taken his decision. He will abolish the Western Extension after all. What has this episode revealed about the Johnson mayoralty? Probably that responding to local opinion can be a complicated thing. Opposition to the extension was stronger in the neighbourhood than across London as a whole. The Queen's Market situation shows in a different way that local opinion can conflict with other principles. Boris promised to be less overbearing than his predecessor by working more cooperatively with London's boroughs. But will he be prepared to wield his full powers against Newham Council? Listening to the community concerns of Londoners is one thing, overruling their local authorities is another. How Boris Johnson resolves such conflicts in future will be a strong indicator of his mayoralty's character. One of candidate Johnson's strongest issues during the mayoral campaign was youth crime. Johnson promised firm policing measures and, in keeping with David Cameron's caring conservatism, to tackle the roots of the problem too, with better guidance and more activities for disaffected young people. For me, it was his strongest policy, and last month, in Edmonton, he launched a consultation, Time for Action.
None of us are so naive as to believe that this is a problem that we can crack, or crack, certainly not crack on our own. We all know that the bulk of the work is already being done by the police, by the boroughs of London. And all we want to do is to learn from what they're doing and to help to coordinate and to build on what they're doing. And all I would say in conclusion is just don't underestimate my absolute determination to make a difference and to make a start on this.
Boris has also held a series of summits to gather expertise as he formulates his plans. Among those attending was Nathan John from Youth Enlightenment, who holds motivational workshops in schools and is presenter and producer of On Point, a youth TV talk show.
Today I'm talking to a former gang member and a young person who's under the pressure to join one. How old was you when you joined this gang, and what would you say were the main reasons for doing that?
I wouldn't say I joined the gang, I say I was more like born into a gang.
Okay.
Like, and it's just same pressures that you're trying to get out of. You want money, you want food, you just want to live. I think that's the same pressures that everybody's under now.
Nathan strives to persuade wayward young people that they can get the things they want from life in constructive, legitimate ways rather than through crime. He sees himself as a social entrepreneur, soliciting corporate sponsorship and talking about transferable skills. It's a language and an approach that fits with Boris Johnson's enthusiasm for individual enterprise.
There are many young people who are committing crime, you know, selling drugs, who have great skills, and it just needs to be refocused, and they need someone to step in and actually say, you're an entrepreneur right now. You know, you're buying and you're selling, and you can't even advertise your product online or have a business card, but, you know, you're making up to $2,000 a week in some cases. Let me show you how you can still make that kind of money, even more, selling a different product, offering a different service. And I think that's actually key in actually changing the mindsets of young people and making them realise that, you know, that they can be successful without doing illegal activities.
Okay, and it's a question of how to reach those people, I guess.
Yeah, a lot of young people are actually open to change. There's people in gangs who are actually scared at the moment, and that's why we're seeing an increase in people carrying weapons and knives, because they're scared and they feel that someone else is going to kill them, so they need to be equipped. And actually, they're quite open for support, but it's the right people getting through to them.
Now, let's talk about Mayor Johnson. During the election campaign, he talked a great deal about crime in general, but youth crime in particular, which was, of course, a cause of great concern to Londoners and still is. But also, interestingly, for a Conservative Party person, he talked a lot about the need to try and address the sorts of social circumstances which can encourage young people to get involved in the wrong sorts of activities, which is quite an interest to me, quite an interesting departure for a Tory politician. Are you optimistic that Boris Johnson has got the right approach to this policy area? Are you hopeful that he's going to achieve good things?
Believe it or not, I'm quite hopeful that Boris is in a good position to bring around change. From that meeting that we had and from the speeches that I've heard him take, and also David Cameron's recent leadership speech, where they're mentioning the fact that these young people need support, you know, that their family life isn't always the way it should be, and it leads them to go into life of crime and negativity. And Boris, like myself, is a big believer in mentoring. And, you know, that played a massive part in changing me and developing me. And that's something that's needed. So at this time, you know, I'm supportive of Boris, and I feel that he's got a good vision with what needs to be done at the moment.
Did you have contact with the previous mayor, Ken Livingstone's regime?
I had a few contacts with the previous administration. I think what I found was, I'm not sure if it was due to the time that were in office or the people that they had working for them, it seemed there was a level of arrogance there where they felt that they had a good hand on the problem. And from meeting Boris, even when he was trying to get elected, he seemed very open and keen to actually find out the drivers and the root causes, and he was just open for ideas from people like myself and even former gang members, which I was pretty impressed by.
So what will it eventually amount to? At the Tory Party conference, Boris announced that he hoped to sponsor a bunch of new academy schools in London to help young talent become fulfilled. Then there's the Mayor's Fund, into which it is hoped London's very rich will pour their spare millions. But will the credit crunch have sapped the spirit of philanthropy? And crucially, will the Johnsonian input into youth provision make a real difference to those most in need of help and improving activities? Time will tell.
Now, to be a British citizen means that you should show tolerance and respect for others. And today, as part of the ceremony, I'm going to be asking you to make promises and to declare an oath for the sovereign that you'll be a faithful citizen.
I, Julieta Cruz Guevara.
I, Mario Musa.
I, Samuel Adini.
I'm in the main debating chamber at City Hall, watching one resident of each of London's boroughs receiving British citizenship. It's the first London-wide citizenship ceremony, and Boris Johnson was eager to hold it here and to preside.
It is very, very hard for us to sum up what it is that draws people to this country. But I think the truth is that it's very often the people who come to a country who best identify the things that make it special.
Boris Johnson is often at pains to describe London's ethnic and cultural diversity as integral to its strength and character, no doubt mindful, being a politician, that many Londoners have suspected him of having a rather different outlook. Indeed, opponents have often accused him of bigotry towards minority groups in general. But that's not a universal view. Tony Grew is the editor of Pink News, Europe's largest online gay news service.
I'm very impressed with this, with Boris. I think he's done well. I mean, this is what I'd say about him. He's the sort of politician that may not know a lot about some of the groups in London that he now is the mayor of, but he is extremely willing to listen and to try and understand some of the issues that people face without falling into the trap of the previous administration, which unfortunately is identity politics, which is something else that came up during the hustings, was this concept that you can sort of target the gay community, talk about the sort of things you think they might be interested in, pat them on the head and expect their votes. I think one of the breakthroughs for Boris was the idea of turning to the gay community and saying, I understand that gay Londoners are worried about crime and housing, just as much as they're worried about whether or not their Pride Parade gets funding. That had a strong appeal after 10 years, 20 years of London identity politics.
Now, what you've said about identity politics, very interesting, because identity politics is an expression in some ways of that desire to bring everybody into the picture. So are you saying that Boris perhaps not represents, but he provides an opportunity for people within those groups, previously marginalised, historically marginalised, to sort of move forward from identity politics? Is that the point you're making?
I mean, you said to bring everyone into the picture. I think Boris would say everyone is in the picture already. And the only time in which you would want to start to identify groups of people is when they have specific issues that need specific problems. And Boris, you know, Boris will be very open about the fact that he feels that black kids, for example, are disproportionately affected by street crime. And that's a specific area.
Now, being alive to gay issues is just one responsibility of any London mayor to the citizens of London. This city is vast and extremely diverse. It's also extremely young. Now, I'm in Whitechapel in East London, outside the office of London Citizens. This is a London-wide coalition of mostly faith groups who campaign on a range of social justice issues. So we're going to talk to three young Londoners who have leadership roles with London Citizens to see how they think Boris Johnson is doing so far.
When he came in, I was a bit worried, I guess, about what was going to happen and the things that he'd take priority over compared to Ken Livingston, because obviously as Labour, his views are a bit closer set to mine.
I didn't think he was the most serious candidate. I certainly didn't think he was going to win initially.
Now, one of the highlights of the campaign for me, someone who followed it very closely, was the Citizens Accountability Assembly, which was held at the Central Methodist Hall in the middle of London. It was a tremendously exciting event with a huge audience of mainly young people. And, of course, all the candidates, Boris Johnson, Ken Livingstone and the others, were asked to sign up to particular campaigns that the citizens have been leading. And to many people's surprise, Boris signed up to two things: supporting the London Living Wage and the principle of earned amnesties for immigrant overstayers, people who shouldn't really be in the country, strictly speaking. Now, a lot of us were very surprised by that, and we expected perhaps that if and when he got elected, he would sidle away from those promises, but he hasn't. So how do each of you feel about that? Are you surprised by what's happened, and how has it caused you to perhaps adjust your view of Boris?
I'm not surprised, as in I thought he was completely incapable of doing his job. It's just that I thought the things that we would have been concerned about, because he is conservative, wouldn't have meant as much, especially things like strangers into citizens. I thought he wouldn't have been too supportive. But the fact that he is shows that maybe, although he has conservative views, he does still care about the what's better for the actual people rather than his own affiliations, really.
Despite all the previous media hype and attention, he's actually turned out to be quite a responsible mayor, doing what all politicians should do, which is listen to the people. Plus, not only is he carrying forth his duty, but he's doing it with great dignity and respect for the people.
London's diversity also encompasses its suburbs, where candidate Johnson won a great deal of support. He promised to address suburban quality of life, concerns about transport, crime, and a sort of loss of that general leafiness so central to suburban life. Is he living up to expectations? Not so far, according to Andrew Wood, who lives in the South London suburb of Forest Hill. He leads a campaign to prevent developers building on a local green space comprising the rather lovely gardens of some old properties.
Well, we're here in the largest part of the site, which is the former garden to 39 Honor Oak Road in Forest Hill. And as you look down, you can see it's made up of two overgrown meadows surrounded by various mature trees and some younger trees. It looks a bit overgrown, but if you're a wildlife gardener, you'll realise that that's the absolute perfect environment for wildlife in London.
You wrote to Ken Livingstone when he was mayor about this and received a rather discouraging letter. It was explained quite correctly that he didn't really have powers to intervene. Now, you also wrote to Boris and you got a reply from him as well. Tell us about that.
Yes, well, we wrote to Ken 2 years ago when our campaign first started, and we thought we'd write to Boris because he'd said that he'd fight to protect the garden spaces. So we wrote to him in the summer, and we were very discouraged when we got his reply because he basically said he had no powers to intervene, and if we wanted any assistance, we could speak to Planning Aid for London.
Boris is proposing to change his London plan, which is the sort of master document which defines sort of planning guidelines for the whole of the GLA area. Now, this area, as we see, it is a lovely, quiet spot. This is the sort of thing that perhaps he has in mind to offer more protection to. Does that not satisfy you at all?
Well, it would have been quite helpful if perhaps he'd written to our local council, Lewisham, and said, I'm changing the London plan, but please be aware that garden sites have a lot to offer the community. They support biodiversity, they improve the quality of life, and you should think carefully before automatically assuming that garden land should be developed.
OK, now, Andrew, some of the other people we've been speaking to who were not particularly enthusiastic about various aspects of Boris's policy programme have been fairly pleasantly surprised by what he's done subsequently. I'm getting the impression that it's the other way around with you.
Well, it was an election promise, and so far we've seen no action on that election promise.
That almost completes my journeys in the capital for this podcast. I hope they provided at least a taste of the broad and often complex set of issues any London mayor has to address. For all his protesting that he wants to serve the whole of London, Mayor Johnson cannot hope to make all Londoners happy. Politics, as ever, is about priorities. With his main policies now announced and starting to take effect, what are Boris's priorities? What are his guiding philosophies? It's time to ask the man himself.
In making this podcast, we've spoken to lots of different kinds of Londoners with different kinds of concerns. We went to the Queen's Market in Newham, and we also visited a man who lives in Forest Hill who's very concerned about green space. Now, I know you can't, for different reasons, talk specifically about either of those things, but they raise some quite interesting points. During the election campaign, you talked a lot about listening to Londoners, all Londoners. You were eager to talk about protecting green space and also looking after sort of important sort of community heritage things such as street markets. Now, at the same time, you talked about wanting to get off the borough's backs, and you contrasted yourself with your predecessor. You didn't want to boss boroughs about. Now, those things...
You're brilliantly formulating a dilemma here. That's right. I understand where you're going, Dave.
Perfectly good principles. Yeah. They sometimes come into conflict. Now, how do you set about resolving that conflict? Is there a sort of general principle?
I think you're right to identify the conflict, and you're right to say that it is sometimes hard. But I find that boroughs are very often looking for leadership. And I'm just amazed time and again with the planning decisions that we get, how often I'm told that even though it's a matter for the boroughs, they're quite keen to hear from the mayoralty and from the GLA about what we think. So there is an opportunity, there's a real opportunity to express our preferences for trying to save street markets wherever we can and for protecting green space. And it's weird how often it's simply the language, the mood music that emanates from City Hall that people are interested in. And so the conflict that you're right to identify, there is a conflict. I'm not going to pretend there isn't a conflict between, you know, wanting to listen to the boroughs and wanting to set clear priorities. The conflict often doesn't pose itself in the way that it might.
Okay. We spoke to a representative of a residents' association in the Western Extension area, and he thought at the time that it was quite likely that you were going to go for option three, which was to retain
the middle way,
the scheme in a modernised form. Now, can you look me in the eye and say that that wasn't actually your secret preference, because many people thought it was?
Well, Dave, I'm going to look you in the eye and tell you that I genuinely saw attractions in a scheme that could have alleviated some of the problems for business and which, you know, could have continued, frankly, I'm going to be absolutely candid with you, to have delivered, you know, some revenue for the London authorities. In a completely, you know, cynical way, I thought, you know, that might be a good way to go. I was absolutely reconciled, and I always made it clear that I was reconciled to getting rid of it if that was the clear will of the people of West London.
So those bossy nimbies in West London got their way. Is that what it comes down to?
I think that we've done the right thing.
I was at your youth strategy consultation document launch, and this has obviously been a big plank of your policy programme. I was quite struck by the emphasis, certainly in the way you spoke, on what we might call a sort of 19th century public school muscular Christianity tone. Yeah. But there were other aspects to it. Now, my question is, you've probably had to speak to a lot of people working in the youth work field that perhaps you maybe haven't had many conversations with in the past. Have you learned a lot of new stuff from those conversations?
I have, and you know, I think my whole sort of intellectual journey I first wanted to be mayor of London, I've been really sort of discovering quite how activist you've got to be, and one of the things I admired about the last regime under Ken was actually, you know, he believed in trying to do things, and you've got to be proactive. And I think there are people out there who need support and they need encouragement. Okay, I'm a bit. I am a public school, you know, rugby playing kind of. That's okay. That's where I come
healthy
in.
Healthy minds and healthy bodies.
Well, a bit of that.
The other way around, in fact, the actual phrase was used, which was.
But you know, it's not actually such a ludicrous objective. All I'm saying, Dave, is it's not quite so demented to be interested in these types of solutions and to want to encourage and support them.
Okay. For me, perhaps the most interesting speech that you've made since becoming mayor, and it was quite an informal one, was one that you made shortly before the Gay Pride March. And you talked about the street mural in Dalston, near where I live. And you were quite nice about it, because it's very much a sort of 1980s agitprop, minorities' rights kind of tableau. And you said, I think, that sort of carnival vision of London, very Ken Livingstone, is sort of what we see around us now, you said. And you admitted that this was actually quite an achievement.
To a kind of dyed-in-the-wool Tory of a certain generation, I expect that it probably is redolent of everything they think was, you know, ludicrous about 1970s Livingstoniana.
Loony, indeed.
Loony, exactly. It sort of seemed. But there's two points. One, that the vision that it incarnates of a great, diverse, cosmopolitan, you know, vibrant, dreadful word, but, you know, unmissable, you know, vibrant community is the thing that's come about. And the second thing is it's very largely the thing that makes London so attractive.
So those loony lefties weren't all bad.
So insofar as they promoted a liberal tolerance and a desire to live together and to understand each other's cultures and to promote understanding, then they were dead right.
So Boris at his most appealing, charming, approachable, entertaining and candid too, about his view on the Western Extension, for example, and the ways in which he's listened and learned. But Mayor Johnson is very much a politician, albeit an unorthodox one. He'll always have half an eye on the next election. Much of what he's done so far has been consistent with his need to improve his image in some Londoners' eyes, as being a typical Tory toff and worse. This is still a work in progress, and may be all the more important when the long-term impact of his policies begins to be felt. Will his strategy on housing deliver the affordable homes London so badly needs? Will his approach to policing produce results? Will his cost-cutting drives really benefit Londoners as a whole as the recession bites? 2009 will begin with a rise in public transport fares. By the end of the year, the true nature of Boris Johnson's mayoralty will be a lot clearer.